Frostbite took a long time to heal. Lake was learning this firsthand, even with access to healing botanicals. He shifted in his seat, pulling his jacket away from his shoulder, where skin and muscle still ached. In the 2.5 weeks that had passed since the Silverfey invasion, the injury had gone from reddish-white to the deep blue of a bruise, and the skin had a tight and shiny appearance. It ached all the time and was painful to touch. Even the cuts he'd sustained from blades hurt less than the injuries from cold exposure, and they were healing faster. He hoped never to find himself in an altercation with high-powered Silverfey ever again. Lake sat in an alcove outside the Coy Library, a half-full glass of apricot wine at his elbow as he penned a letter to Queen Alphamy. The library itself was quiet, but the alcoves lining the hall just outside the entrance were busy. The alcoves had not been damaged in the battle, and Lake guessed that was the reason for the resurgence in popularity, a place to escape the ongoing renovations. Mystic waited, sitting on the thick golden rope, keeping the curtain drawn to one side. She cocked her head, watching him through an eye encircled by a patch of bright green feathers.
I'm going, he muttered, feeling judged. Writing these letters has gotten complicated. Not that I'd expect you to understand.
Picking up his quill, Lake bent to his letter. He'd written to Alphamy the day after the battle, a rushed and bluntly worded message that was sorely lacking in detail. There'd been so much to do, and Lake was in such a shock at the time that he hardly knew what words to use. He'd promised to write again soon, but that promise was only being fulfilled now. He felt guilty that it had taken so long, but only with the passage of time did Lake now feel competent to compile the information Alphamy was waiting for.
Lake, Princess Isabey and her lover, who recently reappeared after having been feared dead, have sequestered themselves in her suite. She'd arrived injured and malnourished, but has recovered almost completely.
The majority in the palace seemed to credit it to the reunification with his soulmate, more than the nutritious food and warm bed Solana had provided. He'd discarded his crutch for a cane, and the only remaining evidence that he'd suffered a broken leg was a slight limp. The secretive couple had helped put the palace back to rights, but since most of what they'd been capable of helping with was now completed, they'd been out of the public eye. While it was easy to guess what they had been spending their time doing, it was much less easy to guess at what Isabey was thinking about the state of her kingdom.
Solana still waits to see if the princess will hold through to her threat to go south, or, now that Shade has returned to her, if he might fortify her with the courage to challenge her brother.
If she does not soon make her intentions known, King Ajir and Queen Esha will command an audience with her.
They've been faithful to provide her with shelter, security, and, most importantly, secrecy. As far as anyone knows, Prince Ferecek still believes Isabey to be dead.
Lake glanced up at Mystic, tapping the end of his quill against his lips as the Rahamlarian prince came to mind. He bent to the page again.
As for Ferecek himself, we await the announcement of the date of his self-coronation.
As you know, our spies have discovered the existence of a son.
Ferecek plans to hand the entirety of the ancient kingdom of Rahamlar over to his boy one day, as whole as it was before Solana's existence.
Solana's losses in the battle with Silverfall were not unsubstantial. We buried 138 citizens and soldiers.
Lady Chifta,
Lake's hand stilled, his gaze returning to her name. He put a single stroke through Lady and wrote above it, Queen. He stared at the title combined with her name, feeling too paralyzed to continue. The woman he loved above all else was now a queen. Like a wound that was continuously reopened, the realization was as painful now as it had been the morning after Slifki's execution. Prior to that morning, he'd been too relieved and euphoric that Chifta had survived the ice to think about what her new position really meant, that she belonged to the Northern Kingdom more completely than she had ever belonged to Khazri. Khazri could no longer dictate who Chifta married, but what might the hundreds of thousands of Silverfall citizens, eager to receive their benevolent queen in place of a long-endured malevolent one, have to say about who their queen chose for a mate?